Cliffcentral.com.
It was a busy weekend indeed, what with back-to-back press conferences and media briefings. And the most important question is for us to find out what impact that had on the rand. Anthea Gardner joins us in the studio this morning. Let's do a bit of a throwback, Anthea, with your song for today. It's a hit with most people. Yes, it's all about the money.
Yeah.
It's all about the money, Anthea. So why don't you set the tone for us for the week?
Shall we start with Friday's big press conference and the president not apologizing and what happened to the rand? Okay. So on Friday during the day, the rand started weak at about 14.93, and then ahead of the press conference, it strengthened to 14.61. I think we were lucky that the markets were closed on Friday evening, because by the time he spoke, even America was kind of going into shutdown. And so this morning, the rand's trading at 14.73. And not only were we lucky that the market was closed this weekend, but I think Janet Yellen making all these dovish comments last week really has kept the rand below 15 to the dollar. So I think we're lucky. I'm not sure what's going to happen this morning. I suspect the rand will weaken against the dollar or against all other currencies. I mean, I can't imagine after Friday's kind of non-event that the rand will strengthen and that investors will be as bullish as they were on Thursday after the Concord decision, or Wednesday. When was that? Wednesday.
Yeah, it was Wednesday. I'm interested in how we've managed to recover almost to pre-Nene firing levels. And that's just on the back of people, obviously, the dollar sell-off, and then the fact that people are just desperate for President Zuma to get the hell out of the way. Is that fair to say?
That's exactly spot on. Those are the exact two drivers of what's keeping this rand below 15, or as you say, pre-Nene level. So Nene was what, 14.60 when that happened? We're now 14.73. Mm-hmm. That's not bad, considering we went all the way up to 16.
But that just shows you that all we really need to do to get the rand to go even better and better is to just get rid of this president.
There you go. And I mean, not only that, but actually the stronger rand is it's good for other things as well. So on Friday, the market was a bit weak, but even then, the banks closed 3.5% up for the week last week. A stronger rand helps our banks, it helps our consumers, it helps our inflation. Yes, so, as you say, you know what to do, right?
Just get on and do it. Yeah. I'm interested in what you think, because I know that the world is full of scumbags and all of them hide their money in funny places. But I'm interested in what you think about the situation in Panama, these Panama papers that have been leaked, showing that lots of world leaders, lots of very powerful individuals, people in business, very, very scaly, dodgy, probably not the sort of people that you should do business with, but nonetheless people who have lots of money, hiding it in places like Panama. This is not a surprise to anyone that there, you know, these places exist and that they are cash, what would you call them, sort of hideouts.
Yeah.
But is there anything in this story that surprises you?
I'm disappointed, because I think if it's a tax issue, then there are enough tax havens in the world for you to go to. So Mauritius tax is only 3%. Monaco is 5%. The Caymans is about 5%. So why go to a place where you want to hide it? Now, I'm wondering if this has got something to do with Switzerland, because, you know, in the last couple of years, people have been always... So I guess Switzerland was easy because they're neutral. So it's not a place that you're going to worry about risk, for example. And you're always okay with the Swiss franc being relatively strong. So if you've got lots of money, where do you want to be? You want to be in a place where your capital is preserved, not where the government is going to expropriate it. And you want to be in a place where tax is efficient or in your favor. I don't know what the tax rate is in Panama, but I'm guessing that people who were in Switzerland before were... Well, I can see why they were in Switzerland, because you're kind of, it's a safe place to be. You know, the government's not going to steal your money and taxes in your favor. But I don't really understand why they're in Panama. I think it really is pure hiding of money. So, like, it's okay to pay some tax, you know, like it's part of life. So go somewhere, put your money in Monaco.
I don't think it's a tax thing either. I think it's about dodgy deals that you need to hide. where you need to hide your money for your, that you've made from the deals, and where you need to hide the fact that you've even done the deals. In this case, with Kulubusa Zuma, it's about that 100 billion oil deal in the DRC, which really has just ripped off the people of that country to just a devastating degree.
So it's just dirty money. That's all it is.
But my question is, are there any consequences for Panama in terms of the fact that they do hide dirty money, essentially? Can calls be made for them to suddenly implement stricter rules around how people keep their money in the country?
So there's something called BIS, which is the, I think it stands for Bank of International Settlements or something. And I imagine that they would be the only people that are able to call money or call regulation, because obviously each country is regulated by their own central bank and by their own FSB or Financial Services Board or whatever it is that governs that bank, for example. So I don't know who's going to call it. Is it BIS? I'm not sure. You know, these people who do SWIFT, the Society for Worldwide International Financial Transactions, these are people that need to regulate the flow of money back and forth. And in an era where more and more governments are collaborating to expose people who are trying to get away with tax. So in the last speech, Pravin Gordhan actually said, you know, that if you've got tax, if you've got money offshore, which you hadn't declared, now's a good time to declare it. I'll let you off lightly, because actually the banks are going to start exchanging information. And if you've got a bank account where you're hiding money somewhere else, they're going to tell Pravin Gordhan or SARS or whoever it is they need to tell. And then you will be taxed on it. So at some stage, Panama is going to be expected to step up and to reveal something. I'm just not sure exactly who it is that's going to do it.
Well, there's a place that we didn't expect all this cash to be hidden. So there are no secrets in a digital world, in an internet-savvy world, and in a world where you can follow and trace just about anything digitally, right?
Isn't
I mean, that's
that
the real
true?
Lesson here. Is that if you're going to be a scumbag, if you're going to be a scumbag, then at least own your scumbaghood.
So true.
Scumbaghood. New word.
Yeah, I mean, lots of people who want to be really rich and they want to take that money from people who don't deserve to be robbed. I mean, who deserves to be robbed? But these people have no scruples, so at least own up to it and say, well, yeah, I'm unscrupulous. Anthea, what's happening in our markets this week?
So we've had a fairly quiet week. We still on kind of very quiet, no company news really going on. Last week we had a couple of big things, you know, the US non-farm payrolls came out on Friday. Number fairly good. 215,000 jobs were created in March. We were expecting 205,000. The market didn't react quite as well as we would have liked, but I think it's got more to do with the fact that unemployment crept up in the U.S. to 5%. It was 4.9%, which everybody really liked, and that Janet Yellen is still making very dovish comments. They've got the same issue in the U.S. as we do over here. They seem to be having a decrease in manufacturing and mining employment. So that's where they're losing jobs, and then they're making up jobs in kind of financials and the retail sector, which is fine, but not that sustainable. You know, you need manufacturing to grow. And then last week, Home Retail Limited, which is Argos, finally accepted the Sainsbury's takeover bid, £1.4 billion. That's what Sainsbury's are paying for Argos, which pretty much means that Steinhoff is now out of the deal. Mm-hmm. Our dear old Steinhoff. But I think Steinhoff are happy to concentrate on Darty, you know, this I keep thinking, what's the English word? It's a white goods business, so TVs, vacuum cleaners, coffee machines, washing machines, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing about what's going on in the retail space in Europe and the UK, and now obviously Steinhoff's doing the same thing, is that it seems like all the retailers are becoming almost consolidated or big players. So Sainsbury's is actually like a Pick and Pay where they just have food. But now they're becoming much more like Waitrose, where they have food and clothing and these white goods or electronics. That's the word I'm looking for. I think there's an interesting phenomenon happening where clearly you can't just be a retailer on one path. You have to have lots of outlets and lots of options and lots of product to really kind of capture the market, if you like. And today we've got African Bank relaunches today under Bill Riley, who's the ex-chief of West Bank. They're starting with an equity base of about 10 billion rand, cash of 24 billion rand. They've got 1.5 million customers. They're not going to be listed on the JSE. So obviously when the bank went into curatorship, their listing got suspended. Their debt will be listed, which is the interesting thing, because that was always ring-fenced of about 10%. So, you kind of lost money on some of the outstanding debt. But, you know, they announced a couple of weeks ago, African Bank did, that they are going into business with Sanlam and offering short-term insurance products, which they'll start doing now. They've got a credit rating of single B+, which is not investment grade, and with a negative outlook. And the negative outlook really is more to do with South Africa and the economy and the consumer that African Bank serves. So they're obviously giving out loans. Talk about loans. Actually, the bad bank is being renamed. It's being called Residual Debt Services Limited. And they still have 4. You like that? You get it, right? Residual debt. Exactly.
Yeah, what a horrible, horrible name, really. I mean, who's that stupid?
So Tom, what's his name? Winterboer. He's the guy looking after this bad bank. He's got 4.8 billion rand in debt, which he is going to collect. But yes, Residual Debt Services Limited, very, very terrible name. And then the parent company remains under curatorship. So I think this is a good opportunity for African Bank really to kind of restart the business unencumbered. So the debt is now in the bad bank and they can do whatever they want to. And I actually think that they're looking to do something in the fintech space. And fintech is kind of the new buzzword in my industry, financial technology, you know, where clients are doing mobile banking and kind of internet banking rather than traditional going into branches and doing deposits and that sort of nonsense. So, I think it'll be an interesting one to watch. I mean, they're far behind Capitec, right? Capitec's got 7 million customers. African Bank's got 1.5. So they've got a way to go still. But with 24 billion rand in cash, they should be able to do something interesting there. I mean, talk about mobile.
But you would not be lining up. You would not be lining up to buy into this, would you?
No, not in a hurry. There's nothing that proves that they're going to outperform Capitec or First Rand or Nedbank, not by a long stretch. No.
Right.
And talk about mobile payments. I mean, I think this is kind of tech really has become the new exciting thing on the block, because on Thursday or Friday, Bloomberg put out an official survey saying that Starbucks was now officially have cracked the mobile payments market. And I thought this interesting article very interesting, because the reason they're saying so is because 21% of all transactions of Starbucks of the company-owned U.S. locations are now done by mobile payments. So everyone's making kind of a big deal about this. 21% of payments are now mobile, right? So through your mobile.
Right.
But remember Alibaba in November of last year when they had Singles Day, right? They have this big sales day where everything is 2-for-1 or whatever. They generated $14 billion in revenue from their Singles Day, one day, 24 hours. And of that, 72% was in mobile payments.
Okay, so Starbucks are not breaking the mold here or anything. They're not doing something extraordinary.
Exactly. But it feels like the developed world is just really slow and we're kind of celebrating a nothing. Where emerging markets are really taking off and it's all very exciting. 72% mobile payments. I think that's very exciting. And then probably the last thing I want to tell you about, Tesla was up 5% on Friday, obviously, because on Thursday evening after the market closed, Elon Musk went out and launched his Model 3, right? Everyone much anticipated, very excited about it. So now the share, since February, since kind of the low in February, the share is now 60% higher. It's a share that really has languished in the last 2 years. Really, because they're spending so much money on research and development and kind of not getting it out there and not getting kind of the traction that they wanted. Up until December of last year, they'd actually only sold 110,000 cars. Then he launches Model 3 on Thursday evening. By Friday, he had sold just for Model 3, or got orders, I should say, for 100,000. And then on Saturday, Elon Musk tweeted that he had got orders by the end of Saturday for 276,000 Model 3s. So that's revenue of about $10 billion. The market is definitely going to like that. I think you'll see the share run again today.
Wow.
Are these all electric cars? Pardon my ignorance.
Yes, absolutely. This is his new... So for $35,000, you too could own an electric Model 3. Which is... Well, I say that. That's very exciting, right? Because he makes it sound like it's affordable. But actually, I think if you're in South Africa, what does that equate to? R500,000? And actually, I think you're probably going to pay nothing short of R1 million after you've added import duties in South Africa. So, yeah, I'm quite surprised.
Plus, you have to have a place in South Africa where you can charge the thing, which isn't going to be easy.
That's true.
Exactly. This is what I was thinking, because in a country like Japan, I think today they've got more charging stations compared to actual petrol stations now in the country.
Absolutely.
Because practically the whole country is running on electric cars. But here at home, it would be a bit of a struggle.
And the Model 3 only, in inverted commas, 200 miles per charge. So after 200 miles, which is what? Halfway between Johannesburg and Durban, basically.
Okay, a bit of a problem.
but we do have charging stations, don't we?
I have no idea where they are.
They're so remote. It's like a few.
I have no idea either. If anybody knows, you can call us and tell us, please, because I've never seen one.
Look, I know BMW was the first to really get in on it, and you can charge up if you got one of their beautiful iCars.
Yeah.
But again, it's like just here or there. The thing is, there isn't a demand for it, so it's difficult to have so many different ports. You know, it's...
And I mean, if we're complaining about the petrol price likely to go up this week, so when you go into one of these electric charging stations, are you charged in a similar fashion for recharging the vehicle?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. So I was in London, at the beginning of the year, and I saw charging stations at like almost every block. Which I thought was fantastic. So you've got on-street parking, and then you've got about three bays, which are only for electric cars, and you've got a charging station, but it doesn't look like it's a place where you can pay for anything. There's no attendant. There's no kind of credit card facility, unless obviously they know you because it has an IP address or something. I don't know.
Interesting.
But I reckon you'd probably get electricity. Oh, I tell you what, I reckon Elon Musk would probably provide charging stations for free just because he's that kind of guy, and he wants this to take off, you know, and he wants you to buy his car rather than make money on the electricity.
I'd be fascinated to hear if these things are even ready for South Africa. I mean, or if South Africa is ready for them, because as Mub says, in Japan, they've got more charging stations than they do petrol stations. And the other thing is, you can't just drive in, fill up with petrol, and drive out 5 minutes later. You have to charge the thing for about an hour or two, as I understand it, and then you have a full charge and you can move on. So for that hour or two, that means that people have to do something. You know, it's not like driving down to Durban and you have to stop in Harry Smith and you fill up with petrol and you carry on going. Here you actually have to stop for 2 hours and do something.
Yeah, I suppose it's much more of a city driving car, isn't it? So you'd get home at night, plug it in, drive it all day tomorrow, plug it in the next day, kind of.
Yeah.
Not long distance cars. But still, I think it's very exciting.
Well, you'd think so.
Okay. And is that all, Anthea?
I think I've run over time. But just one last thing before I go. Sorry, Mav.
That's all right.
Yeah, it's okay.
Just if you're holding Tor shares, so you remember Tor is the company, industrials company, that Charles Pettit is the CEO of, as well as being the CEO of Stellar Capital, the first ever CEO of two listed companies. So if you're holding Tor shares, and we've spoken about this before, and you possibly are, I have to tell you, you have an option to buy to get a dividend of either cash, or you can take shares. So if you take a cash dividend, you'll get 3.5 cents per share. If you take shares, you'll get 1.3 shares for every 100 shares that you hold at a value of R2.95 per share. I've done the math, because you do have to do a little bit of it, and you are better off taking the shares because you're getting a 10% discount, basically. So if you're holding Tor shares, take the scrip option. And that's it, I think, yeah.
Hmm.
All right, guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And we'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, we'll catch up again with you tomorrow. Thank you very much, Anthea Gardner. Cliff Central.
The revolution. I've got something important to tell you. CliffCentral.com.